Welcome to Brain Ignition Radio. Here I share with you all of the knowledge and resources I've gained as it relates to nutrition, exercise, and brain health. By sharing these interesting case studies, in-depth discussions, and research, I hope that we can learn together and improve our current health and the health of future generations. I'm your host, Chet Binning, and I thank you for tuning in. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we start a brand new series on metabolic health. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about skinny fat. We're going to talk about what this is, how we can identify it. And we're also going to talk about how people who fit this skinny fat criteria, they actually have a similar risk for things like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, as individuals who are overweight and metabolically unhealthy. We're also going to talk about a subset of individuals who fit another category, and that is individuals who are overweight but considered metabolically healthy. So we'll talk about the differences between these, the similarities, how we can identify these, and ultimately what we can take away from this today. So before we dig in, I think in terms of practical tools that you guys are going to get from this, I always try and make sure that I'm not just bombarding you with a bunch of cool research and science, but I'm also giving you important things to take away and actually apply to your life. Well, I think with today's episode, certainly there's going to be some tools, some practical tools, whether diet or lifestyle and so on, throughout this episode that you can apply. But the biggest takeaway that we're going to get from today's episode, I think, is honestly just some knowledge to be able to sort through all the bullshit that's out there, frankly. This is probably just the biggest takeaway. Especially online, especially on social media. And we're going to get into this a little bit. But I think that's the biggest takeaway today, guys, is just some education, some knowledge. Maybe what I mentioned in the introduction is a shock to many of you. I know it was a shock to me when I first uncovered this. And so I think it's just, like I said, being able to sort through all the crap out there. Because most stuff nowadays, it doesn't acknowledge this, right? It doesn't acknowledge that some people who are normal weight are actually metabolically unhealthy. It doesn't acknowledge that some people who are overweight are actually considered healthy, metabolically healthy. And like I said, we're going to actually kind of dig a little deeper into this and talk about some of these key differences and how and why this is even possible. Now, before we really jump into actually defining these two conditions, we'll call them, there's definitely some prerequisite science that we have to go over. So I like to do this on most shows. We can't just jump into things because then there's going to be a lot of just gibberish that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So the first thing I want to talk about for today is how do we actually get fat? This is an important question. How do we actually gain fat? So as we know, and as many of you guys probably already know, the most important thing for fat gain is energy surplus. So that is taking in more energy than our body is consuming. So if we're in an energy surplus, that energy is going to add up. The body's going to store that energy. It's going to store it as fat. And then if we continue this, we're just going to either maintain or continue to store more fat. And that's really it. It's as simple as that. But as we get through this episode, we're going to find out that this is not the only important thing. Definitely not the only important thing. And in fact, there is some other important mechanisms at play that are responsible for us getting fat. And I'm just going to go through a few more of these right now. We're not going to talk too much about them, but they are gut bacteria, actually. So believe it or not, our gut bacteria can change in a manner that extract more or less energy from food. So depending on our gut bacteria, so the makeup of our gut bacteria, they may either extract extra energy from our food or extract less. And what this means is that if we're extracting more energy, well, then we're more likely to store more fat and so on, like we just talked about with the calories. If the gut bacteria extract less energy, well, then that's gonna probably support storing less energy and ultimately storing less fat. And that's a whole, you know, complex discussion and a topic that's just newly emerging month by month, is this idea of gut bacteria and how it affects weight. But important to note this, this is a factor. Hormones too, of course, hormones are super important. Hormones like thyroid, insulin, cortisol, and the list goes on, leptin. We've talked about some of these, and more of these will come up again in these coming episodes. But of course, hormones are critical. How these hormones change, how they change as we gain fat, lose fat, how they fluctuate based on our diet, based on our lifestyle. This has an enormous impact as well on actually getting fat. Fructose intake. So this is really important too. This is going to be a focus later on in this episode. Fructose is something that we get a lot of from fruit. However, that's not really the fructose that is the concern. So fructose isn't, you know, always bad or automatically bad. As per usual, it's the dose that makes the poison. And we see a ton of added fructose in processed foods now. So we're getting more fructose than ever, too much usually. And as you'll find out later, this can be a huge driver of obesity and some other metabolic problems. Now, there's also lots of other inflammatory effects at play when it comes to gaining fat. If we look at one example, if we gain a certain type of fat known as visceral adipose tissue, so actually this is the fat that accumulates around our organs, that really ramps up inflammation. It ramps up inflammation in that stored fat. And the problem with this is that inflammation, as it increases, stimulates our immune system. So it kind of puts our immune system into overdrive. Now, that's not a good thing, because what that does is when we get this accumulating inflammation, well, that's going to affect other mechanisms, actually. It's going to affect things like hormones, which we know are critical for gaining fat and body composition. And so that's just one kind of simple one example of how inflammation factors into this. So if we accumulate a certain type of fat, inflammation ramps up, and then this inflammation quite literally sends out signals that impair these other hormones. So hormones like thyroid and insulin and leptin and so on. So this is actually one way, guys, that inflammation itself can actually directly impair some of these other hormones, and how inflammation can affect other vitally important mechanisms. So if we just look at something like insulin or perhaps leptin, these are going to impact something like hunger. So now you can see how having higher levels of inflammation can impair our hunger. So just kind of one little example there, right? And of course, this is a lot more complex. And so we don't want to really spend too much more time on that right now, because we want to stay focused on the topic for today. I can't get too off track, because I do that all the time. You guys will start yelling at me through the stereo. And then another thing I want to point out here is hyperplasia versus hypertrophy of fat cells. So when we get fat, one of two things can happen. Our fat cells can grow, or we can actually develop new fat cells, so more fat cells. Now, most common is actually hypertrophy. So fat cells grow and fat cells shrink. As you gain fat, the fat cells grow. As you lose fat, the fat cells shrink. Now, the other just fascinating thing here is that as these fat cells grow and shrink, this too is going to send out different types of signals. So fat is, as I've said before, it's its own organ, which is just crazy, right? Now, what this means is that our fat actually communicates with the rest of our body, communicates with other organs, it even communicates with our brain. And as these fat cells grow, this is another mechanism that can mess with really everyday feelings, something like hunger, right? So as fat cells grow, for instance, that is actually going to modulate something called leptin. Leptin, if you guys remember, is one of the important signals or hormones for hunger. So controlling hunger. And the point here is that as fat cells grow, it really disrupts this signaling mechanism. So that's hypertrophy of fat cells. Hyperplasia is when we form new fat cells. So this is not as common. Typically when we gain fat, we have hypertrophy. Sometimes, however, we'll have hyperplasia. This is going to be really interesting later on. Hyperplasia, in some instances, seems like it can be a good thing with some evil to it. I'll kind of explain that later on, but just something to keep in mind, right? So this is good. Now we're aware of these, so that when I mention them later on in this episode, it's going to ring a bell. And then the last thing I want to cover is different kinds of fat. I've kind of already mentioned these, but the two we're going to focus on today is visceral adipose tissue, or VAT. This is the fat around our organs. And then we have subcutaneous fat. I don't have a good short form for you. Just think of it as sub-Q. So this is the fat that builds kind of underneath your skin. Think of it as more surface fat. Now, there's some other types of fat, but we're going to focus on these two today. And you're going to see why these two different types are really so important, and why visceral adipose tissue, or VAT, is so problematic. So we're going to focus on today skinny fat and healthy fat. These aren't the proper definitions, but there's so many different definitions of these two scenarios that I just want to simplify things and go skinny fat or healthy fat. I'll give you the proper name for this right now, just so that we're aware of that, but you know, they're hard to keep track of. So one name is MHO, or metabolically healthy obese. So this would be our healthy fat, MHO, metabolically healthy obese. And there is other names for this, But the important thing for us today is that 15 to 45% of obese individuals, are considered to be metabolically healthy. So 15 to 45% of individuals who are obese are actually metabolically healthy. Whereas 6 to 30% of normal weight people are considered metabolically unhealthy. So 6 to 30% of those who are skinny fat, otherwise known as metabolically obese normal weight, or MONW. I don't really want to be using those names throughout this as we go along. So we're going to use skinny fat and healthy fat. So the shocking thing here, guys, is that individuals who are skinny fat actually have a very similar risk for type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease as someone who is obese and unhealthy. So I want to say that again, because I think this is probably a shocker for a lot of people. Individuals who fit this skinny fat phenotype have a similar risk for type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease as those who are obese and metabolically unhealthy. So there's a lot of real world examples of this too. If we look at a place like India, India actually has low rates of obesity, but very, very high rates of diabetes. And this is why. It's because they have a lot of people there who fit this criteria. They fit this skinny fat criteria, and they've developed diabetes despite being not obese. So why do you think there's such a big range here? Because those are large, right? 15 to 45% of obese are considered metabolically healthy. 6 to 30% of normal weight are considered metabolically unhealthy. Well, this is hard to diagnose, right? In fact, most of this probably goes undiagnosed. This just has to do with the general kind of makeup of our healthcare system. So unfortunately, oftentimes we will use BMI and nothing else as a strong indicator of health. So what do we see happen, right? You go into the doctor, they maybe look at you or actually check your weight, or maybe they do check your BMI and they say, okay, your BMI is pretty low, you know, your body weight is normal, then you're okay. We don't need to run these other tests. We're going to assume that you're healthy because you're normal weight. The problem of this is that how much then goes undiagnosed? And this is, it's kind of a scary question actually, but there is some data that shows us maybe the real answer here. So some experts suggest that about 1/3 of Americans have pre-diabetes, but many do not know this. Now, again, we don't know how many of these Americans are overweight, how many are normal weight, but to think that 1/3 has pre-diabetes and maybe don't know it, that is an enormous number. Now, there's another study which I've often referenced that shows that 88% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy. So this means high blood pressure, high fasting glucose, high triglycerides, and low HDL cholesterol. So 88%, isn't that crazy to think about? Now, why don't we hear about this? Well, for one, it's kind of what we just mentioned, right? It's because a lot of this goes undiagnosed. But more importantly, in order to really figure out if someone is metabolically healthy or not, you need to take a deeper dive. So in most instances, we're not looking at this much detail, right? We're not doing this much lab work, this much testing. And so that's why a lot of this is undiagnosed. And that's why I wanted to give you guys some of those markers: blood pressure, fasting glucose, triglycerides, and HDL. Maybe you've had these, maybe you haven't. So if you're not familiar with them, that's okay. But this is kind of the most important thing here, is that we don't always have this extensive work. But furthermore, most of our kind of our agreed upon criteria of whether or not someone is metabolically healthy, usually it doesn't include all of these. So it's kind of just ultra simplified, doesn't use all of these, and so it doesn't pick up on this. So 88% of Americans, that's a crazy number. And a lot of that, as we discussed, are probably these individuals who are skinny fat. So what then are the actual characteristics of being skinny fat? So it's a BMI of under 25. It's hyperinsulinemia, which is high levels of insulin. It's hypertension, and it's having high levels of visceral adipose tissue. So this is probably the key here, guys. High levels of visceral adipose tissue. And, you know, maybe we've seen this before, right? This skinny fat phenomenon. I mean, you probably have, right? But I don't think most people appreciate the seriousness of this body type, of having this visceral adipose tissue is what it is. I think most people don't appreciate that this is actually a serious problem. I mean, remember, similar risk for cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes as someone who is obese and metabolically unhealthy. We often label those who are obese as being unhealthy. And, you know, a lot of the times this is, I think, an appropriate label. You know, it's important that we recognize that, yes, being overweight 9 times out of 10 is not healthy, and we need to be able to talk about that, and we need to be able to make changes and help those people. But I don't think that people realize that this skinny fat is basically the same as that, just looks a little bit differently. So I don't think we recognize this. So this is important information, I think. So with this visceral adipose tissue, like I said, this is an incredible indicator. Because if we match people based on how much visceral adipose tissue they have, so just imagine that you have someone standing there who's overweight and obese, someone beside them who appears to be normal weight. They may even look skinny. But if those two individuals have the same amount of visceral adipose tissue, which is possible, this is possible. You can't always tell just by looking at them. Well, then you can actually determine that those individuals have the same amount of insulin resistance, which basically just means that they have some markers of prediabetes or maybe even diabetes. Now, we cannot say the same if we match subcutaneous fat. So if two individuals standing side by side, regardless of their size, have the same amounts of subcutaneous fat, that's that fat just beneath their skin, you can't determine the metabolic health of those two people or say whether or not they're similar. But if you have two individuals who are side by side who have the same visceral adipose tissue, so the same fat around their organs, even if one person is very large, the other person looks skinny, this tells us that insulin sensitivity or insulin resistance, you can determine is the same between those two people, even though they appear completely different size, completely different weight. So this is the key takeaway here, I think, and just the part that is, I think, so shocking. And like I said, I was certainly shocked myself when I first started to learn about this. I want to take this chance, guys, to let you know that the website is back up and running. I've made some important changes to the site, so check that out when you get a chance. And if you are interested in any of my services or ebooks or other offers on there, check those out. If you have questions about those or maybe upcoming offers, please feel free to reach out to me via the contact information in the show notes. Visceral adipose tissue, this is the fat around our organs. Definitely a very problematic thing. And I mean, you guys have probably got the impression by now that if you were to have one type of fat over the other, you definitely want the subcutaneous versus the visceral adipose tissue. And we'll talk a little bit about a couple things we can do with diet to have some control over that. But just so we can appreciate the seriousness, there was a study by Peterson et al. 2021, so a recent study. This was earlier this year, or perhaps it was the end of 2020, but what they found is that the risk of admission to ICU from COVID went up by 1.37 times for every 10 centimeter squared increase in visceral adipose tissue. That is a insane correlation, guys. This shows us the problem, the huge problem with visceral adipose tissue. And I hope that you guys now understand a little bit more about this type of fat and why it is so problematic. As I said, it is really a reservoir. Think of it as a reservoir for increased inflammation. So increased inflammation, which then basically sends out signals to the rest of the body and the rest of the brain, which can impair anything, really. Our immune system, other hormonal systems, our brain function, and so on. So visceral adipose tissue is not a good thing. Now, the crazy thing about this, though, is that we can get rid of this. We're not stuck with it. We have control over this. We have a choice. So while this study found an increase for risk of ICU admission for every 10 centimeter squared increase in visceral adipose tissue, guess how long it takes to get rid of up to 30 to 40 centimeters squared of visceral adipose tissue? Well, 12 weeks. That's it, guys. 12 weeks to get rid of 30 to 40 centimeters squared. And do you know how this is achievable? Well, it's our good friend exercise, wouldn't you know it? So this has been published several times over. Studies showing that exercise, and in this scenario, a 12-week program, can significantly reduce visceral adipose tissue, which in this scenario, based on the data, well, that would dramatically reduce our risk to admission to ICU from COVID. So again, I think this is pretty valuable information, which the public would benefit from, but did we hear about this? Have we heard about this anytime recently? No. Did we hear about exercise? No. Was exercise accessible? No. None of this was talked about. And so this is, again, just my pet peeve with all of this. And this isn't a COVID episode, but it's just absolutely ridiculous and extremely frustrating that our officials have just basically lied to us about this stuff because they're aware of this. Those who make the recommendations are brilliant. They're aware of this research and we're not told it. Why? I don't know. But anyways, here it is for you guys. It's pretty interesting stuff, right? Definitely not a secret, that's for sure. Pretty easy to find, pretty well known. So let's get back to our main focus for today. Now, what we were talking about was the visceral adipose tissue, right? Now, another thing, another key differentiation here between perhaps what makes someone healthy fat versus unhealthy fat. So we're going to focus on that now. We talked a little bit about the skinny fat. Now let's focus on this. But actually, let's just jump back here real quickly and talk about this skinny fat just a little bit more, because there is something that I should have mentioned. You can pretty easily pick up on this, guys. This isn't like some type of like illness or condition that just like creeps up over time, which we have no ideas there and have no control over. Quite the opposite. I mean, to the well-trained eye, you can tell if someone has this body type, right? It's pretty easy to tell. There's a lot of central fat on a thinner frame and low lean muscle mass. So those are the keys there. Fat retention, especially around the midsection, and then low lean muscle mass. So yeah, you can, like I said, pick up on this. And I highlight that because I don't want people to think like, oh no, I wonder if this is me. Like, you know, I feel pretty good. I look pretty good, but I hope this isn't me. No, this is, like I said, something you can pick up on. To the trained eye, if you weren't aware of this, you know, maybe you are now. Maybe this encourages people to get some tests, or maybe you want to tell friends or family or loved ones that maybe fit this, like, you know, hey, like, I don't know how you've been doing, but maybe here's a couple tests to be good to look into, especially if they're not feeling good. We're going to talk about later on in a couple episodes how this skinny fat can actually affect our brain function. So how it can cause changes in mood. And so this is why I want to bring this up, right? Because if we want to address big health problems we see nowadays, chronic illness, especially mental health, things like depression and anxiety, we have to be able to talk about body composition. We have to be able to say, hey, my good buddy or whoever it is, I know you've gained a lot of weight lately. You haven't been doing too much. You've kind of been off the grid. I haven't heard from you. You don't seem yourself. You haven't been going to the gym anymore. How are you doing? Maybe here's some things you want to try. We have to be able to have that conversation, and we have to be able to recognize that this could be present with someone who's obese and unhealthy, could be present with someone who's skinny fat and also unhealthy. And so this was really one of the major motivators behind this episode. And maybe I should have explained that in the beginning, but there's my sales pitch halfway through the episode. So yeah, let's jump back now to what might make someone overweight but metabolically healthy. So as you've probably guessed by now, for one, it's the lack of visceral adipose tissue. So someone who has a lot of subcutaneous fat, but not very much visceral adipose tissue. Now, the classic example of this is your NFL lineman, or maybe even your college football lineman. I'm not going to go so far as to say like every lineman, you know, because obviously the caliber here is important, like how much muscle mass they have, how much they're training and so on. But anyways, that's what we're talking about here. Sumo wrestlers, believe it or not, can fit this phenotype. They're obviously clearly overweight, but they don't have a lot of visceral adipose tissue. A lot of it is subcutaneous, usually because they have a lot of muscle mass, they're training a ton. And so the fat they develop is subcutaneous and not visceral adipose tissue. So I think that's such an important takeaway right there, guys. And also, doesn't that just show us yet again the incredible importance of lean muscle, strength training, and being active? And I do want to highlight that strength training is uniquely important here, because your stereotypical distance runner who never lifts weights can fit this skinny fat body type, right? I think we've all seen this. If weight training wasn't necessary, well, then every distance runner would be metabolically healthy and none of them would be skinny fat, right? So we need to have that positive stimulus for our muscles. We need to maintain that muscle and build that muscle. And this is just another reason why. So to return to our question, how might someone be overweight but metabolically healthy? Well, we talked about the type of fat. But it turns out that in some instances anyways, how their fat cells grow, or how their fat grows, I should say, can also impact this. So remember we discussed hyperplasia versus hypertrophy. This was a shocking finding. I was actually really surprised when I read this. It turns out that having your fat cells grow is actually, so hypertrophy is actually more likely to push someone towards obese and metabolically unhealthy, but creating more fat cells or hyperplasia is actually what appears to make people obese, but still metabolically healthy. So I was kind of surprised when I stumbled upon this, because forming new fat cells is not a good thing overall. Like if we were to compare just like forming new fat cells versus not, you definitely don't want to, because they're hard to get rid of. So what does that tell us? It means that future fat loss could be more difficult if you've formed new ones. So if we just use kind of like a practical example here, that sumo wrestler, well, it's going to be harder for them in the future to lose fat. And maybe that's not a surprise, but I think that's, yeah, I was pretty surprised to find that. So I think if we are to summarize this, is if we are to get fat, or if we are to get a lot fatter, then maybe we want to form new fat cells. But, you know, I'm not even really sure that's the case. This is just kind of like, I would call this preliminary data, but I did want to highlight this because I thought that was just fascinating. And you're probably wondering now, well, why is that? So it has to do with actually the vasculature. So how this affects the blood flow to our fat tissue. So it turns out, if fat cells are growing, so hypertrophy, which is more likely to make someone obese and unhealthy, this growing of fat cells basically makes this remodeling of blood flow to this fat, because we need blood flow to fat. But when these cells grow, it kind of disrupts all this. And it disrupts it, which ultimately increases inflammation and then leads to things like insulin resistance and some hormonal issues. On the other hand, when we get new forming fat cells, those fat cells can stay small. And this is better able to maintain the vascularity of that fat, which is then better able to maintain, you know, things like insulin sensitivity and so on. So I know that's kind of a little bit deep into the weeds, but I just, like I said, I thought that was so cool and I wanted to highlight that for you guys. So let's now move forward to something called NAFLD, or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. I just wanted to add this in because this kind of further addresses the problems with visceral adipose tissue. And NAFLD, this is something that is just snowballing nowadays, unfortunately. I mean, we even see this in kids now, which is just so sad and mind-blowing, because, I mean, this was once a disease of alcoholism, right? This was when we first discovered this fatty liver, as it's known, was a consequence of being an alcoholic. And we didn't think this would come from anywhere else. We didn't know it could come from anywhere else. Now, we see this developing in children. It's not from them boozing. It's from processed food, all this garbage. And it's just such a sad thing. But the rates of this are climbing in kids. So to think now that kids have fatty liver disease is awful. And in fact, 30% of American kids are now obese. And 75% of these obese children, it's so serious that they have the vascular age equivalent to someone who is 45 years old. I mean, it's crazy. And this just, again, highlights the problems with visceral adipose tissue, excess processed food consumption, and just gaining weight like this. So just kind of a sobering thing. But the main reason I wanted to bring up this concept of fatty liver is because it gives us some clues into how diet can actually make us more or less likely to store visceral adipose tissue. And the leading theory, at least right now, is it seems like excess fructose consumption. So excess fructose consumption, which, as we discussed in the beginning of the show, comes from processed foods. So things like high fructose corn syrup and so on. It seems like this is one of the major contributors to visceral adipose tissue, and specifically visceral adipose tissue around the liver. In other words, fatty liver. And the reason fructose is such a culprit here is because fructose biases towards the liver. So when you consume fructose, which I mentioned is in high quantities in processed foods in particular, the majority of it is actually taken up by the liver. So it goes to the liver and there it is metabolized. This is not like your typical sugar. So something like regular sugar, it doesn't go to your liver. It bypasses your liver and then provides energy for other cells throughout your body, maybe your heart, maybe your brain, and also for your muscles. Now, can too much sugar or too much glucose be an issue? Absolutely, 100%. But it seems like extra fructose is probably more problematic compared to excess glucose. And it's just because of this metabolism, because the fructose goes to the liver. And if you guys are kind of confused with those differences there between fructose and glucose, just do a simple Google search, you know, fructose versus glucose. Check out maybe three different sources that pop up there. And you can get like a quick little background on that about the key differences. But fructose metabolized in the liver, this leads to some big problems, and seems like it's one of the major culprits of visceral adipose tissue in general. And in fact, the last thing I should mention is that there is some interesting data now that shows that even when calories are matched, the removal of excess fructose can actually reduce visceral adipose tissue. So when calories are equal, reducing fructose can improve visceral adipose tissue. So this shows us that, again, calories or energy expenditure is not the only important thing when it comes to fat loss or fat gain, but also it's the type of energy. And I don't think that's a shocker to you guys if you've been tuning in for a while. But just another piece of data that kind of highlights that. And that's actually it for today, guys. That's what I wanted to cover. I wanted to give you guys the basics of skinny fat, of healthy fat, and then of those differences. So some key takeaways from today: skinny fat, not a good thing, right? The risk for chronic illness is actually similar to that of being overweight and metabolically unhealthy. Furthermore, there is some people who are actually overweight and metabolically healthy. So we talked about a few of those examples, someone like a sumo wrestler. With those people, there's a couple keys that actually allow that. So visceral adipose tissue was the big thing, right? So limiting that as much as possible. We talked about how diet and fructose can affect that. And then we talked about things like strength training and exercise and why that is so important for really both categories, right? Both categories, that is very, very important. And so next episode, I'm kind of drawing a blank on the exact order right now, but next episode, or maybe the one after, we're going to talk about how skinny fat can affect our brain. We're also going to talk about how being skinny fat, or also being obese and metabolically unhealthy, disrupts our hunger and how it can impact things like cravings and mood. And then in the final episode, so there's going to be four parts to this. I forget what the topic is, so that's very anticlimactic, but those are two other things for you guys to look forward to. Stay tuned for the fourth one. This is going to be a four-parter. As I alluded to in previous weeks, we are going to have a huge focus going forward now on mental health in particular, how things like body composition and diet and lifestyle have an enormous impact on that. And as always, guys, please, if you have any feedback or recommendations for future episodes, please let me know. As I've said before, I do often try and adjust these episodes to the audience based on what you guys want to hear. If you like these episodes and you haven't already, please leave us a review, some feedback, and share this with friends or family who you think might also dig it, because ultimately that's really what helps get this information out there. And I think today's episode especially, I think this is pretty important information, right? Especially in 2021, when we get a lot of our information from visuals, right? Visuals have such an enormous influence over us. And what I mean by that is looking at images of people. We scroll through the feed and we look at images of people who are overweight, and we maybe label them as, oh, you know, that's unhealthy. That's not a good thing. And I don't want to downplay that, for sure. I don't want to be like the cosmopolitan here who is like, as long as you're happy with your body, that's all that matters. That stuff's awesome. You know, that's great. Self-love, really important. But what they do is they downplay the clinical, the real scientific health problems with being overweight. And that's not a cool thing at all. That's not a good thing. Doesn't help us. It doesn't help us address the enormous skyrocketing rates of mental health and chronic illness, which creates so many problems that we need to address. Something like the cosmopolitan, they're not helping with that. And I think stuff like that is BS. That's not what I mean, but still, this is important, right? We need to appreciate that we can't just simply label people just from looking at them. And then vice versa too. Think about that young boy or that young girl scrolling through the feed. They see someone who is skinny and they want to be like that person. Probably this is more likely for young females, I would imagine, but maybe not the case. Regardless, they see that individual and go, oh yeah, that looks good. You know, they're getting a lot of comments. They're getting a lot of likes. People say they look great in that bathing suit. Well, I want to be like that person. What are they doing to be skinny? Okay, I'm going to do that. Not understanding that, well, actually this person, if they actually revealed themselves more and didn't use all these filters, they might actually be skinny fat. And now we know that this could and does, I should say, not could, it does, based on the data, severely increases our risk for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Remember that example from India? They're not overweight, but they have high rates of diabetes. As we're also going to talk about, emulating that person, doing what they're doing, who's skinny fat and becoming skinny fat, not knowing it's a bad thing. Well, they might not know that that young female or that young boy appreciate that, well, actually, now I may also be increasing my risk of mental health issues, maybe anxiety, maybe depression. And those are some other things that we're going to dig into in the coming episodes. So this was, like I said, some of the rationale behind why I really wanted to get this information out there. And I hope just helps put things into perspective for you guys. So that's it for today. You guys can't see, but Benson is sound asleep on the couch behind me. Maybe then it's a good time to end this episode. He's pretty bored with it. Just sick of the information. So good time to end it, I think. That's all, guys. Thanks again for tuning in. Looking forward to these next couple episodes. Like I said, please, if you like this, leave us a comment, leave us a review, share it with others. And thank you again for tuning in.